CliffCentral.com.
If you were looking for a hip hop album to buy this year, this has to be it. To Pimp a Butterfly by Kendrick Lamar. This is I Love Myself. A lot of people seem to think it's like you know, an anthem for masturbators. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair. I think it's a great album and it's a fantastic song. It's actually the official NBA song for the year. You know, so kudos to Kendrick Lamar. 5 minutes after 1 o'clock. Thank you very much for joining me, Jack. I'll be with you guys all the way up until two in the afternoon, and I am here with two very good friends of mine. But I'm going to start off with this friend of mine who came from Pretoria. Neo, how are you doing, buddy?
Yo, man.
Are you alive?
I'm alive. I'm well.
How are you feeling inside your body?
Inside my body, I'm doing very well.
Eh? You're doing very well.
I had sex with a girl, female girl.
Oh, okay.
I'm emphasizing how girly, how much of a woman this woman is.
Okay.
A female girl.
A female girl.
Yes.
Just, yeah.
Entered there, like, yeah.
You know?
Woo.
On a Friday.
Oh.
You know, at 1 in the afternoon. You just had to say that. The very first time I invite you to join me, and that's what you open with.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it's fine.
Now you know I have sex also, so.
There you go. Yeah. There you go, man. We will be hanging out, Van Given. Neo Van Given is his radio name, and he'll be keeping me company. He'll be co-hosting the show with me as we interview this, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the right adjective to use to describe the person we're hanging out with today. Lyle, while we inflate your head, please just sit there quietly, just for a second, and we'll get to it, you know. So, a couple of weeks ago, right, I was sitting doing, you know, nothing. And
going, loving yourself.
You know, loving myself, you know, to the utmost, you know, and I went on Facebook, and a friend of mine from primary school, I mean, I met this guy in primary school. We were like, I don't know.
Mad buddies.
Mad buddies.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And we were the Rainbow Nation. I was a black kid, he was a white boy, and we were friends. You know what I mean?
True that.
And I knew there was something great about him. You know, because I only hang around great people.
Of course.
You know, it's a must. And I was on Facebook. And lo and behold, there he is.
Yeah.
Attempting to summit Mount Everest.
This guy. Who looks like he eats bears for fun. Like,
right?
Bears for dinner.
It looks like every time he wakes up in the morning, it's just in the bench press position. Just, you know what I mean? In the studio, we're joined by a fantastic young man, Mr. Lyle Turner. How you doing, buddy?
Great and you, Jack.
I'm fantastic, man. So let's first off, tell you what the show is about, right?
Yes.
The name of the show, well, considering that we are guest hosting, we are going to call our show 20-something, right?
Awesome.
And it's about 20-somethings doing amazing things, right? And Lyle happens to be one of those 20-somethings, right? So, first and foremost, Lyle, when did the idea to summit Everest pop into your head? Like, what happened?
Well, I've kind of always been a sporty individual, and it's always been a lifelong dream of mine.
Yeah.
And but really, the last 3 years has been the realization of that, and kind of actioning that project.
Yeah.
So it's been 3 years of prep. I did climb a lot when I was younger, but the last 3 years have really been the pinnacle and the main kind of platform to go to Everest.
Yeah, man. You know, On Facebook, you actually have a page that's set up, an adventure with a cause.
Yes.
You weren't just trying to climb Mount Everest. You actually had a reason for doing it.
Yeah.
What was that reason?
I climbed for a condition called Huntington's disease, which is a neurodegenerative brain disorder.
Yeah.
So that's kind of I call it my power in the outdoors on kind of any adventure. And, you know, it's very close to home, having impacted my family for 4 generations. So
yeah.
I kind of channeled that energy into trying to make an impact and really majorly trying to honor the family I never had the privilege to meet. So that's kind of my power on the mountain.
I hear you, man.
Lyle, all right.
There we go.
Yeah.
No, I got you.
Right.
I got you.
Lyle.
Got you.
The prep. The pre-prep, I mean, preparing to do this amazing thing, climb this mountain. Yeah. What was the routine? What did you do?
Well, basically, experience is very important. So you have to have climbed certain mountains just to also get to know yourself in certain scenarios. Mm. But then the physical training is anything from whatever you like doing. You know, I balance a lot of mountain biking with running, and then with a weightlifting regime. You know, I've always been into weight training, so I still keep it relative. So anything, you know, just your weekend rides, you're going to cover a few hundred kilometers on the bike, let alone what you're going to do on the road running during the week. And, you know, keeping a good weight training regime just to keep that body to weight ratio up there. So it is an intense regime where you'll train, you know, your weekend training sessions are prolonged, you know, they're up to 6 to 8 hours. You know, during the week with working life, it's not that possible, but it's early in the morning, at least 2 hour session, and then at least an hour in the evening too. So it is an intense, if you take it seriously.
I mean, it must have taken quite a bit of strain on you.
Yeah.
I mean, mentally, how do you even begin to prepare for such? I mean, yeah. In your mind, like,
look, your mental game is everything.
Yeah.
You know, but how I approach my training is I look at training as my lifeline. You know, I'm training to save my life. I'm not just training to set a good time with everything. You're training as your life's on the line, and your mental game is everything, you know. But you know, for me, it's really the cause I support that always brings me through, because it takes it back and it kind of humbles me and puts it into perspective with why I do this, and the kind of realization that I'm not only letting myself down if I don't take my training seriously. I'm letting down a lot for what I stand for. So
yeah.
The mental game is kind of everything in this prep.
Yeah, man. So if you actually want to join the conversation, you can do the old school move and give us a call on 0861555189, or you can move to the 21st century on Twitter at cliffcentral.com or at Jack_5'4", as well as on Facebook. We are there, Cliff Central. But you can also send us your messages on WeChat. If you've got a question for Lyle, you can add us our official ID, WeChat ID, which is Cliff Central. You can tap connect and then message to show. That's how you can get some of your views in.
You have a lot of support.
Yes.
I see a lot of messages on Facebook. It's just a lot of friends and a lot of people just saying, oh, Lyle, we're wishing you the best. You're amazing, doing phenomenal things. How does it feel to have such widespread positivity and support behind you?
That's quite incredible. You know, I must say, I have a very small circle of friends. So, you know, building up on this journey, I kind of reconnected with a lot of people. And, you know, some people that didn't really know me, but Say and I were moved by kind of the journey. And for me, that was actually, you know, I wasn't aware on the build up that there was that many people intrigued, you know, and the selfless thing that someone else is interested in something that I'm so passionate for. It's really special for me, you know, and I don't take it lightly. And, you know, a lot of people are dear to my heart. And, you know, it's just the fact that, you know, if you want to champion a cause, it's just special to have people that want to kind of walk a road with you.
Talking about the 21st century, social media, the supports, there was a 17700 challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
What was that? What happened with that?
Jeez. My best mates, they didn't know what they were getting into. But they wanted to do, 17,700 seconds, which is, you know, the equivalent of up and down Everest in meters, you know, gained and lost. And so that the equivalent was that of that was a 5 minute plank or bridge, you know, not the plank where people just spread out on top of a car. And
yeah.
You know, it's your exercise, you know, your bridging exercise. And, you know, a 5 minute bridge, I call it's a bit of a dogfight. You know, it's to get that last few minutes is quite a challenge. And you know, they hadn't done a lot of this exercise in their lives. And I'm like, do you guys even know what you're committing to? They're like, no, we want to do this. You know, every day you're on the mountain, we're going to spend this time with you. And so they got into it, and every week or so I'd phone them and they'd be like, geez, you know, they can't even do anything else in the gym, let alone. and kind of that kind of spread around the Huntington's associations that I visited around the world. And, you know, if it was a guy that wanted to run a half marathon or something, it just kind of with my close mates doing something, it kind of spread out to people doing a bit of a personal best thing, you know, for them to challenge themselves in some way, whatever they see fit.
I actually saw some of the pictures of the challenge, and I mean, they weren't just doing it randomly. I mean, yeah. They were in some strange places, yeah, as well.
Yeah.
I think I saw a picture of you as well, like on between two boulders, yeah, or something, yeah, like that. That is insane. I actually did not think that the 17,000 challenge was that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me and like then, and this body of mine, I feel already I've got a boop and that's holding me down, so I could not have survived.
Yeah, well, I'm short, so I couldn't even stretch myself out that far to begin with, you know. But I mean, when you look at all of these people trying to, you know, somehow be, you know, a part of the, yeah, whole journey, what are some of the lessons that you learned from, you know, the whole thing from beginning to up ultimately getting to the base camp at Mount Everest?
Yeah. Well, kind of lessons learned is, you know, if you're really passionate about something, you should really grab it with both hands, and regardless of what people around you think or around that, you got to put your head down and stay true to yourself on your journey, you know. And this year Everest kind of was a big lesson, because obviously I was not there to just end up at base camp. I was there to summit, but you know, things out of our control, with the earthquake and stuff kind of limited that. And it's a bitter pill to swallow sometimes, because it's like preparing for something for so long and you don't even have the opportunity to fulfill that, you know, even if it's within your own, your means that you can't do it, you don't even have that opportunity. So I guess you kind of take stock in life and just redirect course, in the sense that, you know, you're lucky to come out unscathed, and you got to channel that, and it will give the cause the extra year of mileage, which you got to look at something in a positive nature, you know.
Yeah, without doubt, man. I mean, I cannot imagine what it must have been like, you know, to be in that type of situation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there you are. In fact, if you could, I, to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
You were at base camp. I'm just going to leave it at that. You're at base camp, and then what?
Okay, so it's a bit of a there I was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there I was. It was just a kind of ordinary day. We had breakfast at 8 o'clock, slightly later, just because it's a bit warmer. And it was a day with very bad visibility, and it was snowing. So I kind of resided to my tent that morning, and, you know, you just kind of go on with your natural routine. And around 1 o'clock, I was dozing off, and 12 o'clock, sorry, and the ground just started to shake, and you know, I didn't think anything of it at the time, but you know, it got progressively worse, and to a point where I was like, geez, you know, I got up in such a panic, thinking there's a big sinkhole or something gonna yeah, fall out from underneath me, and you know, with that panic, the first thing they said is, get out your tent. You know, I didn't want to be stuck in my tent for any scenario.
Yeah.
And put on my shoes, and with a bad visibility, I looked up exactly where the avalanche was coming from, just due to the huge noise. You know, it's base camp's in this basin, and it's a huge area, but it echoes like you can't believe a small avalanche. And this huge avalanche from LinkedIn, you know, the Seracs collapsed off LinkedIn, and it was just kind of surreal, you know. I couldn't, you know, you think you know what's happening, but it's like you can't really process it.
You know, as you were saying that, I was just about to ask you, what were you thinking? Yeah. But now I'm going to throw that question out.
Yeah.
I mean, there you are, and this avalanche is coming towards you.
Yeah.
What were your instincts telling you?
Yeah. Well, firstly, you know, my first thought was, what is my exit plan? You know, in these scenarios, you kind of do build certain scenarios to if something happens, you know what you kind of do, but nothing kind of prepared me for an earthquake, let's be real.
Yeah.
And my first thing was exit plan, where am I going? And everyone was in the dining tent, already on the floor, but in that moment, I knew I wouldn't make that tent in time. So it was to go just behind to a gear tent that stored all our clothing, and you know, that was immediate. You know, I was just like, that's where I need to be, and you know, I just kind of bolted for that and kind of looked over my shoulder at this huge avalanche, and you know, as I dove in the tent, that's when, you know, we got hit by the avalanche. And, you know, in that big tent, we were filled, you know, up to snow. We weren't buried. But, you know, 80 meters up from us, it was a totally different story where people unfortunately didn't make it. But how kind of nature and fate decides whether that full force comes there or there, it's you can't really, you're just kind of humbled by it.
He sounds like the type of person you'd want to have in a crisis situation.
Exactly. Right? He sounds so cool about it.
BMT, baby. Big match temperament.
Yeah.
Were you the one sort of keeping everybody calm and making sure that everybody's okay? After everyone?
I like to believe that in scenarios, I action things rather than not, you know. And when we were running, this lady just froze next to me, you know, when she looked up at the avalanche. So, you know, I think, you know, that's a prime example of, you know, she ended up falling and breaking all of her front teeth. And afterwards, I asked her, I was like, was that because of me? Because I, like, wanted to make sure. So, you know, and she was like, no, it's not because you pushed me. But, you know, after that, we just had to take stock, kind of look at everyone and see if they're able to help others or if they kind of so engulfed in the trauma that they're not able to help. So in the moment, I do like to think that I do kind of handle situations like that.
At any given point in time, did it cross your mind that you might not make it back?
You know, I think in the moment when I saw it, yes, definitely. Because, you know, from what I've read, from what I've seen, I've never seen an avalanche that big, you know. And I just think in that moment, you just like, as much as going on, you're like, wow, is this what my life, you know, is this where it ends, you know? But afterwards, I kind of, you know, I've always believed my life is, I'm here for a specific purpose. And you know what I mean? I would find it hard to believe that was my end, you know, and that was my fate. You know, but after that, throughout a few days and the rescue missions after it, it is daunting because you don't know if another one's gonna strike. So it does cross your mind, you know, geez, like I'm in such isolation, you know, can this mean something, you know, fatal?
So there you are, you know, the avalanche has, I mean, I can only imagine after the avalanche hit, it must have been dead quiet. What was the next mission? Like from being hit and then now everyone is okay, you're looking around and you take stock of what is happening around you.
Yeah.
What happens next?
Well, after that, it was really to try impact and help other people, because we saw, you know, in the moment, I saw that a lot of other camps were engulfed and kind of as if a bomb had gone off, you know. And so we knew just above us that they were worse off than us. So immediately, whoever could help, we just wanted to get up there. And, you know, because it's precious seconds. If people are buried in an avalanche, you have limited time to try get to these people. So that was the next mission. Although we kind of processed and knew there were going to be aftershocks which could result in other avalanches, we had to channel our energy constructively in that time. So it was to rush up about 100 meters up from us and, you know, to see and kind of separate the, you know, people that unfortunately have passed and critical people and kind of walking wounded, people that can be helped down.
Yeah.
Because at that altitude, if someone's critical, you have to strap them up on ladders or whatever you can find. And it takes up to 8 people to carry a person because of the lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
So that was the next mission, to go up and dig up people that, you know, will be survivors. And we were very successful in that. But those rescue missions continued until nightfall. So, you know, from two until, you know, the sunset.
I'm pretty sure there's nothing that scares you. Nothing is going to come at you and you're like, ah!
After that,
Yeah. So you come back home, the city life, being walking around in these streets. Does that make it easy? Like, ah, man, I've lived through that. Nothing's going to touch me.
I do think it adds a different dynamic to life. It definitely makes for good conversation, but you know, I think it does take time to also just get back into ordinary life. You know, you've kind of gone through a traumatic experience and yes, I do believe, you know, that it will make me stronger in whatever life does throw at you.
Because,
but, you know, it does take time initially just to take stock of what's gone on, you know.
So let's just say, if things played out the way you had initially planned,
yes,
how long would it have taken you from base camp to the summit?
Your expeditions are 60 days.
Yeah.
So I was just a month in.
Mm-hmm.
And but largely with that, it's due to rotation on the mountain, getting your body to acclimatize. So I'd already been above base camp and done my first rotation through the Khumbu Icefall.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just important for your body to adjust, because you can't just increase in altitude every day. Your body has to acclimatize. So, you know, your first month was really the long walk into base camp, which is very long. And then, you know, starting your rotation. So I'd already done my first rotation. So kind of the next chain of events that would have followed would have been a second rotation higher up, and then you wait for your weather window and then go straight to the summit without a rest day.
Making it up there, when you make it up there, because yeah, you are going to make it up there, right? What do you think you're going to do? Are you going to get up there and just fall on your knees? What are you visualizing?
Yeah. Look, in terms of visualization, I always have a bit of a ritual. I always get up there. You know, I do take a knee and, you know, just thank the Lord for my safety, and kind of just, I think getting out in those scenarios, you kind of realize how insignificant you are in the greater schemes of, you know, nature. And, but by that time, it's been a big build up of why I do it. So I often spend time with certain families I've met, and my, you know, family in the past that I've met. You know, and who I try and honor. So at that point, I'm usually, you know, in a few tears, and I just think it's that kind of one moment where you open your eyes, and you know, I always cherish the first view I see after that, you know, and it's so special, and no camera can kind of do that justice.
Yeah.
I always carry a flag with people's names that have passed from Huntington. So, you know, that's the first thing I kind of grab for, and grab a picture. And it's 60 days for a 10-minute view at the top, and then on your way down again.
Yeah, it's
who
actually
does
this? It's kind of crazy when you put it that way. I was like, wait, 60 days, 10 minutes. No, it's fine. Someone bring me a plane. Anyway, we're hanging out with Lyle Turner, and we're just talking about his fascinating trip to Mount Everest. And if you want to join the conversation, old school, 0861555189, on Twitter at CliffCentral.com, Facebook Cliff Central, and as well as on WeChat, our official WeChat ID, which is Cliff Central. You can tap connect and then message to show on Twitter. You can join the conversation with the hashtag 20-something. And, you know, I'm trying to, you know, in my mind, map out how things happened, you know, as you were explaining it, you know. So there you are, you have started the rescue missions, you're trying to get the people that, injured, and those that are well enough to make it back down. As you said, it took the whole day.
Yeah.
How many days afterwards were you still up there, or did you immediately evacuate?
Look, I stayed on for just over a week after that. And, you know, a lot of people would kind of criticize that. But, you know, along the way down on the trail, there were also a lot of other dangers that we faced, you know, such as landslides. You know, there were other kind of villages that were destroyed. So, you know, food and water would become a problem, let alone diseases that could spread. So we stayed on for a whole week after our rescue missions because, you know, just simply because we had supplies, we were in a safe environment in the sense that it would take another earthquake of that size to really for us to be in danger for other avalanches.
I believe it had a magnitude of 7.2 on the Richter. 7.8 on the Richter scale. That's crazy.
Yes.
Oh wow.
Yeah. So it's a big shock of nature. You know?
Yeah. As far as the aftershocks, were there any aftershocks?
The first thing I did was, when I could, get on a sat phone just to try and receive some information about aftershocks, and they said there would be one at 3 o'clock. And at that time, we were very busy with the rescue missions, but we kind of notified our camp as well of that, so they could be prepared. And I didn't, in the field, I didn't really notice that, but the people at the camp did say they felt a small tremor, but, you know, it didn't have an impact at base camp.
Yeah.
You know, there were certain media, releases that there's another huge avalanche that just struck, you know, which alerted and concerned a lot of families. But, you know, Everest Base Camp has a lot of slides every day. You know, even without these things, they, you know, you are in safe areas, but there are slides every day. So that, that kind of, concerned a lot of people.
Yeah.
When that happens, you're in the situation now. Obviously, you're reacting to what's around you, the environment, right?
Yes.
But when you think about people back home that obviously would want to, would have wanted to know, make sure that you're safe.
Yes.
Who pops into mind, like, oh, damn it, this, I need to, so she knows or he knows, yes, that I'm okay?
Well, I let my father know, because he's kind of the man that distributes my messages, you know, throughout that. He's also
great guy, by the way. Great guy.
He's an epic and great individual and great leader. So, you know, he kind of can also deal with this kind of trauma and just tell people what they should know, you know, and he'll know how they can deal with it, you know. So he's the individual that kind of will really channel those messages.
I saw a picture of you guys standing atop of, was it a mountain? I'm not sure, on Facebook. Is he also your gym partner, your trainer, the guy that keeps you in line?
Well, we have been on a lot of adventures together. You know, I believe, you know, Jack was with us, you know, on some of them, visiting a few farms in our younger days. So, you know, we have a great bond. We have a brotherly relationship. So whenever we can, we do a lot of team building together.
I remember there was this, you know how a lot of black people like saying, they didn't know that, you know, white kids could talk back to their parents, blah, 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 blah. I remember there was this one time, I just can't remember exactly where we had gone, but we were fishing, right?
Mm. Yeah.
And Lyle decides to tell me, no, listen, we'll catch a lot more fish if we go close to the reeds and stuff, like, you know, let's go there. And we go there, and one of his dad's fish hooks got stuck, right? So we couldn't retrieve it. And we're trying to tell his dad. So I get there. First and foremost, I had a problem calling his dad by his first name.
Ish.
It was a secret of mine. Now, you know, when I was that young, I was like, okay, Peter, maybe.
like you're pinching yourself.
You know?
Like,
dang. Out his eyebrows.
So I'm like, no, Peter was probably one of the fish just came up and ate it, you know? And he was like, no, bullshit. And I was like, oh my God. You can't swear like that, you know. But I mean, shout out to Peter Turner. He's a fantastic guy. So he was your contact. He was the guy that you would call first.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about such things, how was that phone call like when you actually called him and said, "Listen, this is what happened. There was an earthquake, and we're trying to make our way down." How that must have been the longest conversation you've ever had.
Yeah, look, for him, we kind of dealt with it very well. I just, the first thing in these kind of scenarios that any of my support system, you know, and what I say is I'm fine. You know what I mean? And if my old man knows I'm fine, he doesn't worry. You know what I mean? Because he knows what I'm capable of. So the first thing I said, Dad, there's been an avalanche. I'm fine.
Yeah.
So then he was chilled.
Has to be the strangest sentence ever, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's been an avalanche. I'm fine. Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, all right. Carry on.
Yeah, well, he was at an expo, you know, looking at, you know, some new sporting rifles and stuff, you know, when he gets the phone call. So he was in a very chilled and happy place at the time. But, you know, after that, I just kind of explained the scenario, and I just said what I'm going to be doing, and I gave him a time frame that I will contact him afterwards. You know what I mean? So at least for that time, I believe your family and your support system, all my best friends, you know, they're climbing their own Everest, you know, at the same time as
true.
Me. And so, you know, I just gave them a time frame saying you'll hear from me then. If not, you know, there may be a problem. So, you know, with that, I take it seriously. I do what I got to do and make sure I make the next phone call.
You know, understandably, it was outside of your control,
yeah,
the fact that you couldn't summit Everest. But you did mention that you were going to go next year.
Yeah.
The disappointment, though, you know, how can you even put it into words?
Very difficult to put it into words. But, you know, that's disappointment is an understatement, you know, yeah. because it's so much planning. It's not cheap to climb Everest these days. And,
yeah.
You know, I've got to balance the fact that, you know, if I channeled those same funds through my foundation and to people, how much of an impact would I have had compared to this stint that kind of ended halfway, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess a greater scheme of things, the project's only half done. And, but, you know, you've got to kind of just kind of roll with the punches that life throws at you, you know, because, you know,
that's a huge fucking punch. It's a big punch.
No, it's a big punch. But
yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to just remain positive and, you know, if it just adds to the story at the end of the day. And, you know, I've survived a huge thing in history within Nepal and a big thing in Everest history, you know, so that forms part of my story at the end of the day. So you've got to channel it into some positive nature. Otherwise it eats you alive. You know, the first few days I just locked myself in the room, closed the curtains. I didn't want to see sunlight. I didn't want to see anyone. And, and you've got to do whatever you got to do to turn it around.
True. I feel like we should be playing Eye of the Tiger in the background.
Yes! Dun, dun, dun. I'm actually thinking about how great the tell-all book is going to be, how great the movie is going to be.
Dude.
Yeah.
One man, one mountain.
They thought they could stop him. yeah, man. For now, you know what? I think we're going to take a bit of a musical breather. On the flip side of this, we're going to be talking a bit more about your work. Yes. With, you know, as far as Huntington's disease is concerned.
Yeah.
And we're going to jump straight into that. But I consider Lyle to be a very lucky person. You'll understand why. Like the legend of the phoenix, all ends with beginnings. What keeps the planet spinning? Yeah, man, we're very lucky. Very, very lucky, man, to have Lyle Turner in the studio. We're discussing, you know, some of the fascinating things that he does, you know, his work for, you know, Huntington's disease awareness and the attempt to summit Mount Everest and the fact that there was an earthquake and he came back and then he called his dad and said, there was an avalanche. I'm fine. That is the one thing I am going to leave with today.
Yes.
You know, the fact that someone I know actually said to someone else, in fact, to his father, there was an avalanche. I'm fine. And it was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, I was just, you know, I was in an expo. It's chill. Yeah. It's whatever. You know, hang out with Lyle Turner up until we've got about 20 more minutes and we're going to be discussing some of the, you know, non-profit organizations that you work with in as far as, you know, bringing awareness to, you know, such a cause as Huntington's disease. And when I was doing some, you know, some research on it, not a lot is known about the disease, considering that it's very rare.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I hear that in what, 100,000 people, one in 100,000 people has the disease?
Yeah, well, one in every 10,000.
10,000. Yeah. There you go. Talk about rare.
Yeah, yeah, it is a rare condition. Although it's, you know, there's not a lot of awareness about Huntington's. There is a lot of research on the go compared to other neurological disorders.
Yeah,
but for people that don't kind of understand, you know, medically it might be not the best way to describe it. But people have described it as a combination of Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and schizophrenia. You know, it's a defect of chromosome 4 in the body where we all have the Huntington protein, but, you know, there's just repeats within someone that has the condition. There's repeats of chromosome 4. So, you know, that's what in develops this condition.
And it's a genetic disorder. So
it's hereditary.
It's hereditary. Yes. Yeah.
So if your parents have the gene, you have a 50% chance of inheriting that gene. So, you know, it often impacts people between the ages of 30 and 50 years of age too. So it's often known to impact the breadwinner or, you know, someone that didn't even know it was in their family, you know, and they may have had kids and now they kind of have that, you know, they have that now, know that they might pass that on to their kids.
It's really a hard pill to swallow, though.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at how the disease itself progresses, you know, some people might just think that, you know, I've got a bit of a mood swing or whatnot. Yeah. But when you go and actually check it out, it could be the first step in you know, a very long and perilous road. Exactly. I mean, when I was doing some of the one thing that I think about when I think of Huntington's disease, this is going to sound funny, but you know the series House MD?
Yes.
There's a character there.
Yes.
Who gets the disease? 13.
Sure. Mm.
She's played. The character's played by Olivia Wilde. Yeah. And when I was looking at it, you know, sometimes television can throw you off a little bit. I mean, I was wondering how true it is the way it's depicted on the series and how it actually manifests itself in real life. You mentioned earlier on that there's family members of your own that actually had who have passed on actually from the disease.
Yeah,
is that why it's so close to you?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I believe kind of any charity is personal. You know, a lot of people that have this drive have, you know, survived cancer or knew someone with cancer. Or, you know, in my case, definitely close to home. And you know, as I always say, it's. I love to try and honor those people I didn't even have a privilege to meet, you know. So it has fueled and driven, you know, my passion and my purpose to impact people. And, you know, it's led me full circle in the sense that I've kind of traced, you know, family trees, family footsteps, and, you know, also met doctors that had met my grandfather who I never met. And, you know, it's just stuff like that I've kind of met a whole family around the world, a whole new family and friends, you know, and the fact that the condition ends with our generation is a blessing in that sense. So I believe I have a purpose, and you know, I have a, you know, if you're not impacted, you have a new lease on life.
Yeah, true.
How do you care for a family member that has this condition?
In South Africa, there's currently no care facilities, so that they often go to homes where there's not specialized care, you know. So what's often the case is family members end up being the caregiver, you know, whereas around the world there's specialized homes, you know, where people will end up in. But you know, it's just things become difficult for the individual where symptoms affect different people differently. But you know, over time, the uncontrolled movements in some individuals get so great that it's difficult to walk and difficult to eat. You know what I mean? So it's your, you know, a caregiver in that sense would, you know, help them eat, help them walk, and just help them with their daily lives, you know, to the point where some people are eventually bedridden.
Yeah. I mean, and when you take into account the emotional, you know, part of it. I mean, it's not just it doesn't just manifest itself in your physical movements. Yeah. It also takes a toll on your emotions.
Yeah, where cognitive and emotional difficulties, you know, also play a part. So, you know, that again affects different people differently. But you know, there's a huge mountain to climb, so to speak, with Huntington's, because it's also such a long time, you know, that it impacts people before they pass on. You know.
Yeah. Hectic stuff, man. Hectic stuff. If you want to join the conversation, 0861-555-189 on the old school telephone, Twitter at cliffcentral.com at jack_5'4", and you can send us a message on WeChat, on our official WeChat ID. All you have to do is tap connect and then message to show.
Your organization.
Yes.
Turn it together.
You know? It sounds so cool, right? It sounds like turn up together. What? Yeah, turn it together, man.
Tell us about it. How is it helping in creating awareness and helping to create care for people suffering from Huntington's?
Well, in South Africa, I've joined with the Huntington's Association of South Africa, whereby we have two support groups, one in Cape Town and one in Gauteng. So once a month, we kind of get people together. And, you know, it's really just a discussion forum. And if there's any speakers, any doctors, any neurologists that we can help their impact their lives. And, you know, even if it's someone going into their testing process or in that matter, there is a platform where people can connect. But internationally, I'm part of the Huntington's Disease Youth Organization and the Young Adults Working Group, which largely, you know, we champion projects around the world where with the youth organization, we kind of, we've traveled to various countries, you know, and set up youth camps for to help the kind of youth that, you know, although they, if they're not all, or they are at risk, you know, they have a huge obstacle within their family, you know, particularly if they, if they're experiencing their family going through it, you know, we channel and create youth camps and support systems for the youth around the world, you know, that are impacted by Huntington's.
How can we, the general public, help, contribute? What can we do?
Well, what we've looked for with the youth organization specifically is we've translated the website into various languages. So, you know, I guess a big reach now would be to, you know, maybe put another African language, you know, on the translation list, whereby, you know, on that platform, people can submit a question that goes to a counselor and is answered in an appropriate manner, you know. So, you know, I think to get an African language on there, you know, there's a bit of Afrikaans now we've started. So I think a local language would be awesome, you know. So I think if, you know, people want to get involved, that's a easy way where it's a simple impact, you know, where someone can get involved.
All right, cool, man. I saw a lot of things happening on Facebook. How do people, you know, keep up with, because you are very heavy as far as social media is concerned. Yeah. You there's tons of visibility.
Yeah.
So how do people keep up with, you know,
Facebook? It's Lyle Turner, an adventurer with a cause.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a Turner Together Foundation page, and you know that'll give links and information to the Huntington's Disease Youth Organization and the kind of umbrella of nonprofit work that happens. And then, obviously, Twitter and Instagram is at @Lyle_Turner.
All right.
Don't forget to hashtag Everest for HD.
That's the one.
Yeah, that's right? The one. That's the one.
It's going to roll for extra year now.
Yeah, man. In fact, we've got a whole year to get a lot more people behind it, you know. Because I think it's just fantastic, man. I mean, not too many people, especially in our age group, are willing to go to these lengths, you know, to bring awareness to something that is so dear to them. You know, a lot of us are, you know, we are couch commentators, man. We really are. You know, we just sit there, we're like, you suck, or I don't like it anymore. But then we actually don't get up and do anything about it. You know, we need to get a lot more people action orientated. But like, you know, between now and when you finally get to the summit of Everest, what is your plan looking like? Take us from, you know, May 2015 to May 2016.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole you know, foundation work is my passion and kind of part time, you know, work. So with kind of the other kind of businesses on the go, I need to first of all come up with another $45,000.
Yeah.
But in the interim, I'm helping a British chap, Chris King, break a British record on Kilimanjaro. So he'll try run up in under 11 hours. So I
run up.
Yeah.
Wow.
I ran up in 11 hours and 7 minutes. So current South African record. So
shout out to the, you know, turn up for that. That is amazing.
So I'll be helping him try break the British record. So, you know, that's also a means where people can just keep the momentum and be in the loop. He's also Huntington's disease advocate. So, you know, he's also, he does a lot of work in the UK. So, you know, we kind of like-minded in that sense. So that'll be in August. And then, you know, I've kind of just got to continue with my training and, you know, work hard and also just take advantage of, you know, although it's a tragic thing that what happened in Nepal, you know, we've got to just, you know, run with the mileage that has kind of occurred from that you know, make next year an even greater success.
You know, and I believe a couple of days ago there was another earthquake that hit Nepal.
Yeah.
So
upward of 7-point-something.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And you mentioned before we actually got on air that there hasn't been an earthquake in that region for
nearly 100 years.
Nearly 100 years. Yeah. Can you imagine
of such a great magnitude? You know, so your chances of being there, I guess we are a select few that were picked to be there at some point in our lives.
Yeah, as Neil said earlier on, I mean, that your book when it comes out, man,
hey.
Hey, man.
Paige Turner.
I see what you did there.
Creative juices of lying.
Let's talk about some of the other things that you do.
Yeah.
Some of the other businesses.
Yeah.
You know, if you look on Facebook, look on Twitter as well, this guy's not dressed.
Right?
No, no.
Why are you naked?
All the time. Like, huh? It's so depressing when you look the way normal people do. And then you check out Lyle's page, you're like, oh. Hey.
Damn it.
Yeah, man. No, look, that was kind of in my varsity days where, you know, I had an underwear modeling contract. And, you know, from now I've been more particular with what I do, you know, more magazine work and, you know, but in the same sense, you know, link to HD. So, you know, more, you know, there must be some content to relate to bring awareness for HD. But, you know, business wise, I've kind of portray what I do more a venture capitalist kind of individual. Kind of worked in the oil and gas industry in East Africa and kind of kept all my ties there, you know. So a few smaller scale projects in the supply and mining and consulting business and also supply in the oil and gas industry. So, you know, I've also have to be serious about my career, you know, to kind of channel that into the foundation and where it can lead to.
Because you did some work in Tanzania, right?
Yeah.
Do you ever have time to be Lyle, to be young,
you know,
to be 20-something?
Where's that quad bike you had? Is it gathering dust somewhere in a corner?
Yeah, no, we still have the quad bikes. Yeah, man, in terms of age-relative activities, I kind of, you know, whenever I'm on an adventure, that's kind of my holiday, and you know, I really do enjoy that. So,
yeah.
But otherwise, I kind of just keep doing kind of the ordinary things with my close knit friends and family, and I do take a lot of time out to, you know, keeping the balance is key. But you know, I do believe I'm here for a specific purpose. So, kind of motivation is everything at the moment.
Yeah.
And now we know that you took Jack in at a very young age.
You know.
Brought him to your family.
I was like
yeah.
Ooh. You know. And then I had to go back to the hood and speak Zulu. They didn't believe it, man. They didn't believe it.
They're like, who's that white boy? Who's that white boy, Jack?
Have you always had that adventurer, philanthropist spirit within you?
Yeah, I must say I always have, you know. I've always kind of grown up in that kind of environment, you know. Also, you know, I've had a great family and support system. So I think it's kind of molded that kind of, you know, individual. And, you know, I just think we all here for limited time in the scheme of things. So, you know, we all have to have a purpose. And you know, luckily I found that early on in life. But, you know, I think there's a great deal in living your life with an adventurous spirit. You know, I just think you kind of don't just accept the norm and, you know, whatever it is, whatever in journey you want to embark on, you kind of just grasp at the next challenge all the time.
Yeah. You know what, Lyle, I think this was just, as I said off air, this is one of the best shows I've ever hosted. Thank you so much for coming through, man. I mean, what you've been through over the past couple of weeks is... It's really intense, and only a select few can actually say that. Say what you've been through. No, not too many people have experienced what you've experienced. And considering that you did all of these things just to bring awareness to a you know, a crippling disease. Yeah. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
It makes it even. I don't know.
It adds more to it.
It just gives it a lot more body, because a lot of people. Well, anyone can climb Mount Everest, right? If you put your mind to it. But I mean, if you've got the drive, if you're driven rather by such a phenomenal cause, it makes it even so much better, man. Thank you so much for coming through. Last time, how do we keep up with you on Twitter, Facebook, all of it?
At Lyle_Turner and Lyle Turner, an adventurer with a cause.
All right, coolio. Before we end the interview, though, there was something that you wanted to do before.
Oh, there it is.
There it is. So, you know, because it's Cliff Central and we're uncensored and unscripted, man, we go crazy here. Lau was saying earlier on that, you know what, it's crazy that you guys can cuss on air. It's madness. So, I'm going to give you the opportunity. You can put it in a sentence or you can just go out and say it. This is your chance.
Well, I'll end up with a bit of a phrase.
Okay.
But I just want to say thank you to you guys and Cliff Central.
It's a pleasure, man.
You guys have done your part today to bring awareness to Huntington. So thank you guys a fucking lot.
There you go. And just like that, man, thank you all for listening. Van Given, thank you very much for joining me, my buddy.
Hey, it's a pleasure, man. Thank you for the invite, man.
Ah, you know, if the people here are crazy enough to let us do this again, we will do it again.
Oh,
you know?
As long as you bring the white boy.
Yeah. All right, man. Just like that, we out of here. Up next is Onize on Cliff Central.
CliffCentral.com.